Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is the Dr. Everyone's mic is open. Please begin. This is Mary Neal. I'm here for Ralph Pointer, Ms. Betty Davis, Ms. Lynn Stewart, and all of their guests, Joel Myers, Tom Syracuse, Larry Pinkney. All of your mics are open. Please begin.
Can well, I'll begin. This is Larry Pinkney speaking. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you. Thank you. Larry, go right ahead.
First of all, I want to say extend my warm greetings to everyone, to you, Sister Mary Neal, to Betty Davis, to our dear, dear, beloved Sister Lynn Stewart, as well as, of course, to Brother Ralph Pointer, all of our guests, and to most of all, the listening audience. I'm going to be succinct as I always try to be. Let me apologize at the top. I cannot stay on the show tonight because there is a brother who's coming from Chicago who's only going to be for a very short time, hours indeed. Central Coordinating Committee on behalf of, he worked with me on that committee on behalf of the Reverend Edward Pinkney. Let me be very direct and say, very, very important for us to please remember and to actualize the fact that we have so many political prisoners, whether we're talking about Mumia Abdul-Jamal, whether we're talking about Leonard Peltier, whether we're talking about Seth Hayes. We have so many brothers and sisters who are in these gulags that they dare to call just prisons because they are in fact torture death factories. And I would urge all of us to remember that and to be very active about releasing our, getting our political prisoners released in this country, United States of America. Also, let us remember, ironically, I was just talking to the brother from Chicago that I told you I have to meet with. I was just speaking with him, and Mary, we were talking about the mentally challenged people, prisoners who have been thrown in prison and who are treated as nothing more than chattel because they have severe mental challenges that the system is very much aware of but ignores. And so many of them, as you know, Mary, have been murdered or otherwise neutralized. So I'm not going to take up a lot of time. I want to thank all of you, my brothers and sisters, all of you. I'm sure the program is going to be absolutely wonderful tonight, as it always is. I wish I could listen to it in its entirety, and I express again my apologies. But thank you for allowing me to speak, and as I always say, all power to the people. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much, Larry Pinkney. I don't know how clear that sound is tonight. This is Mary Neal, a director of Human Rights Demand Channel. We're so glad to have you join us here on the Ralph Porter What's Happening Show. That's the Ralph Porter What's Happening Show. And each one of you hopefully will get a chance to speak tonight. The Billboard tonight says, number one, an update report on the Nemura case in Scranton, Pennsylvania. That will be by Ralph Porter and Lynn Stewart. Number two, what is the legacy of colonial terrorism? That's Joel Myers, Ralph Porter, Tom Syracuse, and Larry Pinkney. Larry has apologized and said he won't be able to stay with us tonight. Number three, report on the status of the American death camp system. And that's by Mary Neal, yours truly. Number four, report on political prisoners. That would be New York City Jericho, Ann Lamb. Number five, excerpts from Black Activist Writers Guild. That would have been by Larry Pinkney, Black Panther, and former political prisoner, and he has, again, apologized for not being able to stay with us tonight. Number six, what's happening to the white working class? That would be by Tom Syracuse and Ralph Porter, Joel Myers. Listen, I want each of you to know that we're so glad you're here with us tonight, and I'm going to turn everybody's mic on so that you will be able to speak about the issues that you're here to talk to us about and enlighten us about, and we will begin with Mr. Joel Myers. Is Ralph Porter or Lynn Stewart or Betty Davis, are either of you here?
Yeah, I'm on the line, Mary. Robin.
Okay, very good. Oh, wonderful, Mr. Porter. Great. Well, I'll just let you know that you do have a full board.
Because we didn't get on. Because when Betty was calling.
Hi, Joel. Are you on now? Okay, can you hear everything?
Okay, yeah, okay.
Stay on,
mate, Joel.
Stay on, Joel.
Okay, Lynn, are you there? Lynn?
I'm here, Ralph.
Let us begin the program. Ladies and gentlemen, we are sorry that we didn't get off on the right foot. We have computer problems here, but let us continue the program.
Yes, the music played, Ralph. The great Nina Simone song that you love so much played.
Uh-huh.
Larry Pinkney gave us a few thoughts. He's got to meet a friend from Chicago, so he had to leave. But we're ready to go forward. I'm sure everybody's on the line. So why don't you just take it from here?
Okay. Betty called Tom because he wasn't going to meet. Okay, here we are, folks. I will not read my statement, but the statement that I have been reading is truer now than it has ever been. I will read the statement. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered, except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. And this evening, I think it is proper to begin talking about Trumpocalypse. That's the old game with a new name. And the old game is a boogeyman in front of us, so we have to accept the lesser of two evils. No, we are told we have to accept the lesser of two evils. But we know from James Baldwin and many other intellectuals, there is no lesser of evils. There is evil and there is good. And we must strive for the good. Are you there, Lynn?
Hello?
Hello?
I'm here, Ralph. I'm here. You're fine. You're loud and clear.
Now, Hugo Chavez told us about the old game with the new name that Glenn Ford has taught us. It's the new game. The new name is Trumpocalypse. And Hugo Chavez said it is the dictatorship of the two-party system. That means both parties are the same, and with a few variations.
Hello?
But as a friend reminded me earlier today, that he doesn't care who's president.
Okay, I'll dial the number.
The corporations will tell them what to do. Malcolm X used a word. He says, we have been bamboozled. That is, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. We keep falling for that same old game. Lynn Stewart told us when she says they hold an election every 4 years where the corporate media types the results and drown out the righteous protest. Betty Davis tells us that it's metaphysical imperialism. They tell a lie, and it's just a lie until we believe it, and it's metaphysical imperialism when we believe it, and we believe that we have democracy. So, my problem is none of those things.
Hello?
Hello, we're here.
Yeah, I'm dialing the number now, or should I just stay on the phone?
Please. Okay. And my issue is, what happened to the progressive people, and I say the progressive people, the so-called left. And now I'm going to go back a few years to an older audience, an audience that was mature in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And I'm going to talk about electoral politics and why it is obvious that we are not serious about a movement. Now, you all remember the Dixocrats. Those were Southern racist white people, and everybody knew what they stood for, but they were in the Democratic Party. They didn't need another party name to define themselves. They defined themselves with policy. And the policy was segregation yesterday, segregation today, and segregation forever. Has anyone forgotten Mr. George Wallace? And I remind people that Mr. Wallace was only out-niggered. Let's get the word right. Mr. George Wallace was only out-niggered by the young black hip-hop artist of today. Nobody could say nigger quicker than he could. Strom Thurmond didn't have to say nigger, but you knew what his politics were. And we could get down a list of politicians who were racist to the core. They were in the Democratic Party. And it goes on and on and on. And now we have a Trumpocalypse, the old game with a new name, where we have to be afraid of the new boogeyman. That's Mr. Trump making his dumb racist statements and a dumb, and I have to say it, a know-nothing electorate supporting him. But maybe on the other hand, they do know something. They don't know that the corporations control everything, but they know enough to be slick and sly and say he says some things that, well, he represents them. He's not afraid, but he says what they cannot say. He's a billionaire, and he's allowed to be a racist. And he is a racist, but I'm concerned that we have seen the answers. That is, when I say we, the progressive people of this country, have seen the answer, and we know all of the names. We know Frederick Douglass. Power concedes nothing without a demand. We demand nothing. We see that the Puerto Rican community understood perfectly that they wanted their political prisoners home, and you could not be elected in a Puerto Rican community or Latino community unless they voted to bring their political prisoners home. That is a lesson that we must emulate. But the problem is that we do not want to emulate that. I was just in the courtroom around the issue of hepatitis C, Mumia Abu-Jamal, under his name et al., and it becomes perfectly clear what this system has in mind for political prisoners. What they have in mind is death camps, and the numbers are very clear, and they said it clearly. Hepatitis C is a contagious disease. People in prison get it, but they are not going to treat it until it is at stage 4. Can you imagine being sick and somebody saying, well, we're not going to treat it until it gets real bad, until you're ready to die? They said it in court today. It is very clear for anybody who would like to read that transcript who doesn't understand that for our political prisoners, it is prisons are death camps. And we got to stop calling them prisons and stop calling them exactly what they are. They are
Ralph,
death camps. Yes.
Anyone who wants to hear it said under oath in a courtroom should go tomorrow, because
yes,
the doctor for the state of Pennsylvania, his background is, get this, Harlem Hospital and Rikers Island Hospital, and he is the one who has said, no, we're not going to treat it till it gets to stage 4. because it's not really debilitating. It's uncomfortable. Your life is not good, but we're not going to treat it till it gets to stage four. This is the most perfect example, as Ralph has been saying, of how the prison industrial complex works. It costs $1,000 a pill. That's what the pharmaceutical company charges the prison. The prison won't pay it unless someone's dying. So there you have it. What is important? What are we all about? I take it, I won't say any more, Ralph. Don't call on me. You have very little time, but finish what you were saying. But I wanted to put that in tomorrow, Scranton, Pennsylvania, 10 o'clock in the morning. The doctor is on cross-examination under Bob Boyle. He's going to open, well, he's going to challenge this doctor who is saying these things. Okay, Ralph, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Lynn. And that doctor, if I remind people, as Larry Pinkney says, we can't look at somebody's color and determine anything. As Martin Luther King says, judge a man not by the color of his skin, by the content of his character. And this Negro sits on that witness stand supporting this issue of let them be near death before we are to give them a treatment, loud and clear. But that's not my problem either. My problem is, when are we, the so-called progressive people, going to take a stand and make a demand? We all know what the demand should be. It's, you know, free all political prisoners, because we cannot ask people to join us if when they join us and they are imprisoned, we don't support them. That must be numero uno. That must be the demand that we start out with. We started out with the demand for education in the 60s, thinking that there was a possibility that they would allow us to educate our children. We found out they will not. And there is a film. I don't know the name of the film, but it takes place in Boston, and one of the actors, if Betty can help me with the actor, says, I think it's De Niro, and he says the problem with people of color is, and he doesn't say people of color, he says the problem with the niggers is they think that all they have to do is ask for something and it will be given. But we know you have to take it. And with that said, I'm going to back off and let somebody else come in and tell us what they think about what's happening today and our lack of movement in the movement. Are you there, Joe? Hello? Hello?
Who?
Lynn. Go ahead, Joe. Go ahead. I can't hear you.
Who?
Hello? Anybody there? I think the program...
I thought Tom Syracuse was on the line, Ralph.
He was on the line.
I'm on the line.
Yeah, I'm on the line.
Go ahead.
Hello,
Tom.
Hello.
Okay, right. Go ahead. And
hello.
I'm backing off. Go ahead, Joe. Tell us what you've been thinking about.
Oh, okay. You can hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay, well, it's a very wide-ranging thing. I think that it's a very important principle that people can't really be taken seriously if they don't support the people that have made the greatest sacrifices in the cause that, in the name of which they speak. So, of course, it's very important, and not just because people can't be taken seriously, but because being taken seriously has to be earned, and that's pretty much the first thing. It's just right. So I hope that more people begin to orient in that direction, more people that are involved in progressive causes begin to remember, not just think of themselves, with the consciousness that comes out of living a charmed life, but also think of those who are where that delusion is broken and where they've been beaten down or being punished and are still standing up for the progressive causes that very often got deserted by the rest of us. Now, you also spoke about the election and this whole phenomenon with Trump, and it's hard to say which one is the lesser or the greater of the evils. For example, on some of the issues, Hillary, who's supposed to be the lesser of the evils, it was very instrumental in overthrowing Gaddafi, in trying to overthrow Assad in Syria, trying to impose regime change from Western imperialism onto these societies. And they asked Donald Trump, they said, what do you think about what's happening with Putin? He's going in there. He said, look, the American policy is they pretty much built up ISIS to begin with to go against Assad, and they're worse, and the U.S. should keep out because if you overthrow Assad, you're going to get something worse. So she's more pro-intervention than he is on the live areas where war is being waged and extended. So it's hard to say which one is really the lesser of the evils. It seems that Hillary is being sold as the lesser, and we'll have to see how the election goes because we know that the electorate in this country is very, at this point, very brainwashed and manipulable. Now, I've spoken several times at this forum that what people in the progressive forces should do is come together and hold an alternate election. Now, that doesn't mean running a party as a third candidate, which I don't say that you can't do that, but it sends a different message if you have an alternative election, because it means that you're not legitimizing their electoral process and validating the outcome when, let's say, you get 1 or 2%. You might actually have a lot more because it's those who count the votes, not those who vote that count, as it's said. But at any rate, if we had an alternative election, we would have a way where the progressive forces can have a constructive context to bring their approaches to the people, including the differences, that these should be aired in a very public way so that people could see the richness of the progressive movement and begin to make decisions based on those approaches. And by saying that it's an alternative election, we're saying that we're electing, at least symbolically, a legitimate government, and that what we have now is a carnival and a clown show and smoke and mirrors and deception in which we're ratifying the selection of a bunch of puppets that represent not a democracy, but only a tiny handful of plutocrats, billionaires, their own interests as totally separate and opposite to the real people's interests, those who keep the best of our fighters in prison or assassinated. So we don't have a legitimate government now. We have a corporate shell. We have a bunch of bankers that call all the shots, and then a few politicians that go on TV and explain with deceptive tones what they say that they're doing, lying to the people. It's not really a government at all. It's just an executive committee. And we need a real government, meaning a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And that's what we should come together to choose, at least if we can't implement governance, at least we can show the kind of a government that we would like. And we can present it in a context where we could appeal to the average person who are, even if they don't express it very much, are at least dimly aware of the way that they're being fooled and tricked and lied to all the time and increasingly sick of it. And that's even one of the reasons, one of the things of which Donald Trump is a symptom, because people take, well, you know what, he's different, or he tells these other politicians that they're full of it. Nobody else does. And it's interesting that Bernie Sanders is presenting something at the other end of the spectrum that has not been in a major party, at least in a long time. Not that I'm really pushing him as a genuine socialist or anything like that, but at least it reflects pressure in that direction, which is bubbling up from the regular people. So an alternative election is something that can, you get, at least if not unite the progressive forces, to begin to get them in the habit of working together and debating their differences, drawing the public into the debates, and beginning to, as I say, go through the process of creating the vision of a legitimate government that represents the bulk of the people instead of just the super rich.
Well, thank you so much for that, Joel. And I'm sure we all agree on that position, and I think it's best said, I can't remember who said it, the truth must not only be the truth, it must be told. And so we have to have an instrument and to let the people understand there is an alternative position. And I'll say very clearly that Bernie Sanders isn't it. He's as much of an imperialist. And we have to understand what imperialism means. That means going to other countries, taking their resources, oppressing the people, bringing the money here. Go ahead.
Yes, I agree. As I said, Bernie Sanders, he's a phony and a fake, but he's using what could be called the S word, socialism, because people are hungry for something different than what we have now, and he's trying to sell, to paint that veneer on the system so that people think it's possible just to vote to him, and he's only going to deliver whatever he gets to Hillary anyway, and she'll deliver us into the mouth of hell, because that's where these policies are all going, and people really do have to get rid of any illusions that they have in reform within the system. It's just getting more and more genocidal, more and more all the negative things: racist, sexist, homophobic, ageist. Every bigotry is being incubated by this dog-eat-dog system where we all worship the golden calf, the money over Allah, this money over everything. And
yes.
Everything else
there. And I was wondering if at that point that Tom could come in and give us a perspective on the issues that we are confronted with today, and the issue of the working class and the issue of bringing the truth to the people, and we have a problem making them want to hear the truth. Tom, are you there?
The truth shall make you free. Now, I would like to read something that I just finished writing. It's not that long. You know, there are those who say we are doomed to go from one crisis or one revolution to another without any progressive change. But I believe there has been progressive change in human history, from slave-based economies ruled by divine despots as in ancient Egypt, to the feudalism of the Middle Ages, to the various forms of capitalism in the modern era. All these systems were and are controlled by a small elite living off the exploitation of the labor of the vast majority. But the elite has to brainwash the majority to accept this as normal. Racism, in its many forms, is crucial in this brainwashing. Nationalism and imperialism are nothing more than racism. One national or geographical group feels it is superior to another and has the right to conquer and exploit the other group. Within the so-called homeland, the ruling class considers itself racially superior to the working class, even if they are of the same race. The elite, through generations of so-called breeding, do not consider themselves racially equal to peasant farmers and factory workers. In those countries with a heterogeneously racial population, racism becomes especially prevalent, and the United States is a prime example, where the so-called white race considers itself superior to other darker-skinned people. The enslavement of blacks and subsequent generations of super-exploitation convinced whites that blacks are genetically inferior. Those economically disadvantaged and comparatively uneducated whites, in the main, consider themselves superior to a black person whose income and education are far superior. This black person is considered an anomaly. Supreme Court Justice Scalia just announced that affirmative action in the universities for persons of color is a waste of time. But despite all this brainwashing, the human spirit is so endowed with freedom that it cannot be held down permanently. The advance of freedom cannot take place within capitalism and its bourgeois democracy, so-called democracy. Call me an optimist, but I believe we can progress to a socialism based on freedom that is economically just and environmentally sustainable. But for the first time in human history, we are capable of destroying the entire human race. So we had better opt for freedom, or as Ben Franklin said, quote, "Those who surrender freedom for security will not have or deserve either one."
Well, thank you so much, Tom, because we've had this program and everything in the program has been on the downside. And you have given us the upside, the hope. And this is what we all work for day in, day out, year in, year out. This is what is needed. Your suggestion with Joe Myers that we have to somehow grab the people. We have to grab the people and wake them up. Yes, but I'm going to switch over to Betty Davis and hear what she has to say on these issues. Thanks again. And with that, Tom, you can almost say a Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Analysis. Okay. Betty.
I just want to reiterate what Len Stewart said earlier in the broadcast, that we will be back there for a third day to have the hearing on the class action suit regarding the hepatitis C pandemic that is raging through the prisons, particularly in Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania system, where Mamiya is, has 2,500 inmates, and over 300 of them have hepatitis C, and it is contagious. And one of the moving testimonies that we heard today dealt with Suzanne Ross and Johanna Fernandez describing Mamiya's condition. They said his skin is like was like that of an alligator, and they talked about how even after the healing, he has craters in his skin from where he has suffered the ravages of this disease. And to then listen to someone who claims to be the head of security for the prison where Mamiya is say they could not allow the doctor, Dr. Harris, who has a 100% healing rate for curing hepatitis C within an 8 to 12 week time frame, as opposed to the 12 months that any procedure they use now for the prisoners, and it only has a 40% rate of healing. This man said to let the doctor have a piece of paper and a writing instrument so that he could record his visual analysis of Mamiya's condition was a security threat. And to hear Bob Boyle say, you mean a lawyer can go in with a piece of paper and a pencil, but a doctor who is looking over at Mamiya and has a 100% healing rate is a security risk if he takes a piece of paper to write down and have a better analysis of what he is seeing. When the doctor who was responsible and the head of the medical team at the prison where Mamiya is staying said, oh, yes, we have analyzed the sickness and the disease of hepatitis C into stages, and stage one and stage two, where there's a possibility that they can be healed, we don't address that. We begin to address it in stage three and stage four, and at that point, we've only had a 40% rate of a cure. The risk is that people will live, as Ralph is indicating to me, not that people will die. And I cannot help but take what Tom Syracuse just said about this so-called chief of justice in America. I wish Larry was here so he could say it the way only Larry can say. We all know what justice is, and this is the head person responsible for justice in America telling us that affirmative action is absolutely no use for people of color in the university system. So that's stage one. Like the Jews in 1930 Germany, we are now kicked out of the university. Stage two, we are not entitled to be cured. We are slated for 60% death rates in the prisons when they know there is a cure. But as more than one person of authority in this prison system in Scranton, Pennsylvania indicated, it is too expensive. Even though the cure can be done in 8 to 12 weeks as opposed to 12 months, which would dramatically decrease the cost. Once again, we hear of the struggle of the Green Party to bring about single-payer health care in the background as we note that the pharmaceutical corporations are running things. They will determine what we can afford to have. Dr. Harris, who is responsible for the analysis and curing 100% people with hepatitis C, including himself, made the point that he had targeted 100 people to be cured. I believe they were in a shelter, but only 30 of them could get approval from their insurance health corporation. Only 30. And all of them were cured. And as, again, Ralph said, the issue is not the risk that people will die in America now, especially poor people and people of color, the risk is that too many of us will live. And that genocide is repetitious.
Genocide and reparations is something we have to pull into this discussion. That is, people are being killed by being in environments where Hep C is contagious, and they're going to let it go. And we have people talking about reparations. How about a little medical care for the 300 years, and I use that 1619, 1865, that we were slaves. How about a little reparations in terms of health care for those in need? And how about the issue of health care for all of the people? A little bit of reparations, or no, a little bit of freedom from the corporations that have been ruling us over these years.
I would like to give you a contact number if this discussion disturbs you and you want to lend your support, because typical of Mamiya, this is not just about him, although for the first time we got to see him and hear him testify on the screen. This is the 10,000 other inmates who are in danger of dying of hepatitis C. So tomorrow we will have the continuation of the hearing and the cross-examination of these Mengele doctors by Bob Boyle. One of the contact numbers is 212. I apologize for the delay. 212-330-8029. And I would like to now pass the mic over and say, as Mary indicated earlier, that this is an open mic. And Mr. Pointer, I'd like to pass the mic back to you. Just want to remind you that this is a class action suit. We're talking about 10,000 people who will be affected by this hearing. We need to say no to genocide.
Yes, and if it's 10,000 tonight, it's 10,000 plus tomorrow, because it is contagious. And understand what that means. And understand, when the gentleman testifying for the state was working in Harlem Hospital, we all know the reputation of Harlem Hospital. We know that it has had success in graduating or giving doctors experience. But we all know that if you have a choice of hospitals, you're not going to choose Harlem Hospital. And if you talk about being in a bad place, is Rikers Island, New York. This is the doctor who's in charge of Rikers Island, who worked there. And now he's operating, and as I say, I lean to Larry Pinkney and Dr. Martin Luther King, who says, judge not a man by the color of his skin, but by the content of his character. This Negro has no character. Yeah, he does have character, and you can name it based on his actions. People for sale. He's selling people, to people's lives, to make a living. Betty is suggesting that I tune out now. Is there someone there who would like to continue on the open mic to give us a few minutes as we close this program out? Okay, if not, I will say that these programs, we are looking to record. They are being recorded, and we will send them out to various organizations who will play them. And so, go ahead.
Mr. Pointer, I want to let you know that when the show started, I started saying, Reverend, Doctor, because I didn't expect to have to speak. This is Mary Neal, and I want to thank you for putting me on program to speak about the American Deaf Camp System. I want to reiterate what Larry Pinkney said, that as it was in Nazi Germany, the deaths began with the mentally ill. It did not begin with a particular race of people or political category. It began with the mentally ill. Understand that we have 2.3 million people in prison right now, according to stats, and 1.25 million of them are mentally ill. Is America already going the way of Nazi Germany? And if it is, where does it end, and how do we turn it around? Thank you, Mr. Pointer, for your enlightening shows. I'm the Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. Most of the people being killed by police are mentally ill. Please keep that in mind. Everyone, God bless you. Merry Christmas.
And thank you so much. And let's go to the theme song. And we can't do it from this computer, Mary. You go to the theme song. I guess not. Well, I look forward to seeing and hearing everyone next week. Merry Christmas.
Say them clear for the whole.